look it up. What is this called? What is this? It's Good Green or Garbage, but what is it?
Special Listener Request Edition.
So yeah, it's good.
Dear listeners, welcome to Trapo.
It's the show that talks about stuff on purpose.
Allegedly.
No, it's... That's a confirmed fact. We talk about stuff on purpose.
Oh, that's true.
We're not like Bigfoot.
We are mythical.
Trapo may be a cryptid. I don't know.
Kind of seems like he should be.
Allegedly. I'm Dustin.
I'm Kai.
And we're going to be talking about some music this time. I know, yeah, you're thinking, Trapo talks about music all the time. But yeah, that's true. We're doing something a little different today. And by that, I mean something we've done several times in the past. The music we're talking about has been requested by you, our seven listeners. They've requested some music, Kai. You know this. We've been briefed. We've listened
Indeed.
To the music.
We've investigated. And... We've listened. And now we will talk.
But first, Kai, we have a very important thing we have to...
Fuck.
It's a little thing we came up with this season. We're trying to keep this train rolling with a little segment we call The Exchange. Kai, what have you got for me?
Absolutely nothing.
See, I was hoping you could bullshit and come up with something on the fly.
I can if you go first. What do you got for us?
Well, I got something for you. It's just come out. It's a recent release from, I don't know, she's kind of a new neo-country. I don't even know that's a thing. A neo-country artist named Nikki Lane. She recently released an album called Denim and Diamonds. It's got a really good sound to it. It's punchy. And this is what you may find appealing. It was produced by Josh Homme.
Oh.
He's apparently a big Nikki Lane fan and wanted to help her latest album come to fruition. And he sits in. Play some instruments. His fingerprints, you could say, are all over Denim and Diamonds. It is very recognizably a Josh Homme production, at least in my opinion. I'm not going to say he takes things over. I think it's a lot of fun so far. I think, Kai, you should. Dear listener, if you want to give it a shot, that's really incidental. I'm talking to Kai here.
This is for me.
This is for Kai. I want Kai to listen to this because I think it's pretty cool. There you go. That's what I got. Denim and Diamonds. Nikki Lane. Josh Homme. It's country for cool kids, I think, basically, is what it is. And I'm okay with that.
Coincidentally, I have an album to recommend back to you. Suspend your disbelief here for a second.
I can't make any promises, but I'll try.
Okay. This album is by a California duo called Kamikaze Palm Tree, and it's an album called Mint Chip. I was drawn in by the weird ass artwork like normal, and it's just this kind of weird frenetic pop rock, and it's weird. I like it. You should check it out. Some of it's good. Sometimes it gets a little boring.
Yeah, some of it's good, some of it gets boring, and some of it is bongos lament.
Yes, but it's I think it's worth checking out.
So on this exciting, expansive episode of Trivia, oh, that's stupid. Fuck that. That's not right. Yeah.
You could say that, but I don't know that you should.
We're going to talk about some music. I guess that's it. We're going to talk about some music. We're going to rate it, and we may or may not put it in the canon, the Trapo Essentials canon. Probably not, but we might put some of this in the canon. We don't know yet, but we're going to start off. Our first request from Grand Champion Max Power.
That's a different meeting.
We're not crossing that line tonight. But yeah, our first request from Grand Max Power is a little album that he recommended to us via email. It's called Colorblind by an artist named Sylvie Love. What are your thoughts on Colorblind?
Max Power calls Sylvie Love's Colorblind silky smooth electro grooves filled with synthesized symphonic majesty that conjures such glorious images in the wandering mind.
Can we just say he's full of shit?
I mean, it's smooth electro grooves. That part's true. I thought it was kind of chill and beautiful.
Well, you know what? I have to give him credit on one count, at least, because Theory of Love, there's something about that track. This is what happened in my brain when I listened to it. It felt like I was attending a costume ball at the Palace of Versailles on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it felt like. The images they can create or whatever in the wandering mind, I guess that's it. That told a big story in my brain. It felt like I was attending a masquerade at Versailles in space. Fair play to you, Colorblind by Sylvie Love. I tried to look up the artist and I found next to nothing.
The same. Not a lot of data to work with out here.
No. On this. Colorblind, the album, is everywhere. You can find it on Apple. It's on Amazon. It's on Tidal. You can find it anywhere, which is great. But I found basically nothing on the artist.
Most of the people of the suggestions we have, I've never heard of, but I look them up or it's like Kim Gordon. And you're like, what? Kim Gordon made a solo album 3 years ago?
Sonic Youth Kim Gordon?
And I was like, oh, yeah, that one. But yeah, this one.
I can tell you I found one thing. And I don't even know if you can call this a full review. It was an article written about Colorblind on a website written in Spanish. So I had to translate it. I didn't glean any real information about the album itself from the article. The only thing I learned the artist's real name. Her real name is Sylvia Chavanc. Chovanc. Her name is Sylvia Chavanc. I tried to look up Sylvia Chavanc and I found nothing that would lead me to the artist Sylvie Love.
No one's found random old lady Facebook pages, yes, and shit.
She has no social media presence that I could find. It's frustrating as hell. I would like to know more about this person because she made some interesting music. All I know is that they made an album called Colorblind and that's it. That's all I know. Yeah. I can always find something. I found nothing. I was lucky enough to find the real name. And then look, this may not be the real name of the artist. This could be like someone just made this shit up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no fucking clue. I found no corroborating evidence whatsoever. That's it. That's literally all I have to say about this album. I liked it. I have no idea who made this.
Like Max Power said, cool, smooth electro beats. And the funny thing is, compared to the other suggestions, Max Power had little to say about this. Some cool, silky, smooth electro grooves.
I like the music, bro. Okay, thanks, Max Power. And
the only problem I had was, like, intentionally listening to it was almost kind of boring because sometimes it was just kind of a slow, smooth, mellow...
Basically ambient music.
Right, yeah. It's like trying to analyze a fucking ambient yoga track. Yeah. There's something happening, and you kind of go along with it. I think it'd be really fucking cool if Sylvie Love took this style and made a real fucking dark album. You know, I know that's what you wanted her to do. You know, you're like, she took this and made it like Castlevania music, dark, weird shit. I'm all in.
What else is there to say? Do I think it's good, great, or garbage? I think it's good. I can listen to it again.
I agree.
But I can't engage with it. It's ambient music for the most part.
I put it on a walk a couple of times. Sure. Am I going to go share it with people and tell a bunch of people to check it? No, probably not. No. We give it a double good.
It's good. But you know what? Max Power, thanks for bringing it to our attention.
All right.
What's next, Kai?
Next suggestion is from the same email. Max Power wrote, after Sam Ray had an asthma attack that landed him in the ICU in 2021, he got a real taste of his own mortality and channeled all of that into the gonzo experiment he called Honeybee Table at the Butterfly Feast from his band, Team Suicide. Disjointed and bizarre, a sonic exercise that may not be entirely successful, but you can feel Ray's fear and exhilaration and passion radiating from the incredibly personal work. That's what Max Power had to say. So Honeybee Table at the Butterfly Feast. Yeah, it came out August 2022.
Relatively recent release.
This fucking guy. Sam Ray, who has released a lot of music under several different labels. And
he's made a lot of music. Okay, it's all him. But
most all of it is all him.
He just has different names. You know how weird it was for me to Google teen suicide?
Mm-hmm.
That made me very uncomfortable.
How many things pop up before you hit Teen Suicide album?
So thank you for that, Max Power. Thank you
very suicide much. Rate is the first thing that popped up online.
Thanks for that, Max Power. You made us feel very, very uncomfortable Googling Teen Suicide. But, you know, maybe that was his goal. Maybe that was it.
And if they find the album, listen to it, whatever.
Maybe it isn't entirely successful. It's not.
It definitely feels like an experiment.
He almost died. It freaked him the fuck out. And you could tell, listening to this album, it is a burst of disjointed creativity.
Yeah, this is one of those albums where there are some, it's a song. There are some things that I don't know if you could even, where does recording noise and song begin and end? And I'm not talking shit. I'm just saying some of it is just weird fucking noise for a minute and a half, and then that's right. It. But also, like Max Power said, it's fucking disjointed and bizarre. It's weird smashes and bangings and metallic clangs. And then the next song is like a guitar groove.
This doesn't fit by design. Clearly.
Yeah. Is this like a 16-year-old kid who's never made music?
No, this is a veteran.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, this guy's made 50 albums. He's just going fucking bonkers. Yes. Max Power said gonzo. That's pretty accurate. It's just fucking like an absurd caricature of what you could do to music. But also, I imagine if he's trying to push the fear and exhilaration.
It's here. It's all there.
All the emotions are in this.
There's no filter here.
It's kind of similar to Tears Is Color Grade to me, in that it feels like a really good producer could have helped them refine this into something amazing. It was just him banging this shit out, and then he put it together, and they went, all right, next track. And that's fine. This could have been really fucking cool. Some of the sounds are just weird and amazing. About the middle of the album, there's a song called Violence, Violence, which is where the fucking album literally just falls apart.
It's like sketches, not even complete songs.
Oh, yeah, sketches. It's like a sketchbook. Like Max Power said, it's fucking weird. The first time, I was like, I'm not in the mood to listen to this right now. I can't. No, it's interesting. It's weird. There was quite a few reviews. Like you said, this guy's been making music a long time. He's got a decent following. And a lot of the reviews that I read also were, like Max Power said, it's not always entirely successful, but it's not bad. I don't know that it's amazing.
It's very interesting, at the very least. It is an interesting experiment.
Yeah, you have not heard this before, I promise. No.
There's a lot going on underneath the surface. Not all of it is communicated very well, but I don't think that's the point. You can't even call it an album. Technically is an album, but that's not what it is, really.
It's a collage.
I was very happy to have listened to it. At the same time, I cannot see myself revisiting it often, or maybe at all. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't know that I could say garbage, but I don't know. Is it good? I think it's good.
I would say great, but I wouldn't ask for it to be in the canon. I'm kind of at war with myself. I think what the artist has done here, I don't know if it is great. I don't know, but listening to this, it's great to me.
The best way I could put it would be, this is like an interesting piece of artwork. You don't want it in your gallery, but you want it to show up in a show for a week and then move on.
I'm glad it crossed paths with me. I'm glad I've become exposed to it, but do I want to keep it in my permanent gallery? No. I want it to tour. Let it keep touring and let other people see it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. I want the world to know this music exists, and I think it's great in its own way. I really think it's cool.
It's worth a listen if you're into music pushing boundaries and making weird noise. If you need a structured song with chorus and a beat, this is not for you.
Had coffee and an otherwise forgotten dream.
Otherwise forgotten dream.
When was the last time you collapsed?
Maybe it is. You should check it out. Maybe it'll help expand your horizons.
It might.
If you listen to our podcast and you like things like Midnight Star and Kiaville, then you should check this out.
Listen to it once. See if you can get through it. If you can, pat yourself on the back because you win.
I wonder if I could grab a top 40 radio listener today. I wonder if I just gave this to him, how many attempts it would take for them to get through the whole album. Would they ever get through it?
I don't know.
By the time they get to Violence, Violence, be like, no, I'm not doing this. Drake has a new album out. Fuck this.
That's okay.
And that's fine.
Oh, you don't want to listen to the rest of Honeybee Table, the Butterfly Fiends? Oh, no, you're like a normal person.
But Max Power, we hear you. We appreciate your fucking weird shit. Thank you.
Up next is a recommendation from somebody on the official Trapo blog. I looked it up. I couldn't find it.
We couldn't find it. It was way back there. Sorry, people.
Ghosts on Tape from Blood Red Shoes.
I said it once, so I guess I'll say it again. I've been down and out, and you never even witnessed it. 'Cause I'm a sucker for
listened to this probably around the time when it was recommended, but we just didn't talk about it. We decided for this episode, fuck it, let's listen to it again.
This came out, what, January 2022? Did you recommend this to me? Is that where it came from?
Did I recommend this? Okay, I'm going to go to the travel blog, fucking January 2022. This is not coming up. I swear to God, someone recommended this to us. I'm not seeing jack shit.
I read through all the emails we had.
Yeah, this isn't coming up. Somebody mentioned Blood Red Shoes at some point on the blog. We listened to it, put it up for a vote. Right now, we're going to talk about Ghosts Untamed. So you're welcome. Blood Red Shoes is a duo. We got Laura Mary Carter and Stephen Ansell. They've been together for, what, 17, 18 years?
Apparently since the early 2000s.
This is their sixth studio album. This is the first thing I've heard from them, which is crazy to me. I like this music a lot, so I'm thinking, how did five previous albums of this music completely escape my attention?
Yeah, kind of like Tuna Bunny. When I heard it, I was like, what the fuck?
You've been making music before this? Ghost on Tape was inspired by a true crime podcast. That was like the big impetus. I guess they liked a bunch of true crime podcasts. Let's make an album inspired by that. It's not a concept album. It's just they took that as a source of inspiration. A lot of the songs on Ghost on Tape are told in character from very fucked up individuals. And this is a direct quote. It explores the dark psyche of those at the pinnacle of outsiderdom, which I don't think is a real word, but I'll take it. You want to take that quote at face value when you listen to the music of Ghost on Tape? That captures it exactly. It explores the dark psyche of those at the pinnacle of outsiderdom.
The pinnacle of outsiderdom.
Yes. There's a lot of anger here. A lot of darkness. There's no darkness creeping in at the edges of the music. The darkness is...
It's pervading.
It is midnight on a moonless night. You have to start at the album artwork. Laura Mary Carter, she's the cover model, and she's wearing those big, thick ZZ Top sunglasses and the mushroom cloud reflected in them. It's so apocalyptic and so depressing and so real. That's basically the tone of the entire album.
Yeah.
The backdrop, red bleeding into blue, it's very poppy. It's almost cheery. And then you have that orange mushroom cloud reflected in those glasses. That's art. You could put that image in a museum and it wouldn't feel out of place. That's great shit.
I would hang that on my wall.
Before you listen to any of the music, that's the first thing you see. And then it starts with the Comply, I guess, Comply. The first track. It was not intentional on the part of Stephen Ansell when he wrote the song, because the song was written pre-COVID. The phrase, I will not comply, has been co-opted by certain alt-right individuals for people who will not comply with COVID regulations. I'm not going to wear a mask. I'm not going to social distance. I will not comply. That's become a phrase for the alt-right. It's literally on t-shirts. That little prick who looks like Pinocchio sells that shit on t-shirts. So the phrase, I will not comply, has already been co-opted by the alt-right, which makes this a little uncomfortable for me to listen to that song when he starts screaming, I will not comply. Divorced from the modern political climate, I think it's a fantastic song.
Aside from that,
it starts out with that simple piano melody, which it's right out of Ghosts. That is a Ghosts track. That's Nine Inch Nails.
I think that was probably the reason I kind of fell in love with this album right there. It starts out with a recording from Trent Reznor's phone at 3 a.m. when he got up in the middle of the night and ran over the piano and just banged the shit out on the piano. Later, he would go back and add some synths and the fucking guitar would come blaring in, and then he'd start screaming about something. This goes in a different direction, but that's how it starts. I swear that is, like, that's gotta be almost exactly a Nine Inch Nails song somewhere. Yeah,
the whole song is a Nine Inch Nails song. The first quarter of the song is from Ghosts. As soon as you reach the melody, as soon as you reach that main beat, it's right at a downward spiral. It's anger, it's frustration. The way this song devolves, Comply is a really fantastic opening.
Every time it hooked me.
And it's powerful shit. That's how it begins. Right off the bat, you're like, this could be something special. Spoiler alert, it's something special.
And I think the first time I listened to it, I was like, why the fuck haven't I been listening to this since the last time I listened to this?
Why the fuck have I not dipped into their catalog? They've got five other albums out there. Why the fuck haven't I listened to them? I think I'm excited because this means I get to dip into something I don't know. I get to kind of reverse engineer this band, which is kind of an interesting way to kind of deconstruct a band's catalog.
Yeah.
They're from England, from Brighton. But I think they both technically live in Los Angeles now.
That was one of the things I saw, like, one thing that said LA duo and one thing that said British duo. So I wonder if that's just because they were living in LA at the time.
And Laura Mary Carter has a popular podcast out called Never Meet Your Idols. So if you want to get into that, Kai, look that shit up. I guess for people who are unfamiliar with Blood Red Shoes, there's a bit of an origin story regarding that name. I think it's funny because I've heard this story regarding Ginger Rogers before, but I figure, you know what? There's no reason not to share it now with our theoretical audience. Blood Red Shoes took their name from an incident that took place during the filming of a musical called Flying Down to Rio that starred Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. Ginger Rogers, after performing multiple takes of a very complicated dance scene, she was wearing white satin shoes. Her feet had developed very severe blisters that had burst, causing her to bleed profusely into her white satin shoes. So her shoes began to turn blood red. Hence the name Blood Red Shoes. Do you get it? Ginger Rogers danced so hard in her fucking pumps that they turned blood red. I have no doubt that Ginger Rogers bled profusely several times while performing in her films with Fred Astaire. These two folks from Brighton thought that was such a cool idea. They said, you know what? Let's name our band after that. So yeah. Blood Red Shoes was born. Now, I think I want to close with a quote from Stephen Ansell. Ultimately, this album is an invitation. It's us saying this is our world. These are our darkest thoughts and feelings, our ghosts caught on tape.
Fucking amazing.
We got to rate it, Kai.
It's fucking great, goddamn
it. Is it great?
I think it's pretty fucking great.
So what does that mean for the Trapo Essentials canon, Kai? Is it going in the canon? I think it's going in the canon.
Blood Red Shoes, ghosts on tape, fucking A.
You made it into the most prestigious canon the world has ever known because this shit's going into space. Aliens are going to it, and you're welcome. I don't think we've stressed that enough. Aliens are going to this. That's the highest compliment your music can receive. They're going to space.
When they hear them sound wave.
Thank you, Trapo. What's next, Kai? What's next?
Up next is Second Line by Don Richard.
What does it mean, the second line? To get the good footwork with the good work. It's a celebration. An opportunity for us to do us. I want to get you to move.
Who was it that requested this?
Look, somebody nominated Second Line. Oh, it was the Elf Sires. That's
Elf,
what it was.
Elf Sire. Yeah,
the Elf Sires nominated. No, Sires. It was plural.
Sires. Right?
They nominated Second Line by Don, D Delta WN. Now, Don Richard recorded some music under the name Don with the Delta. Most of her solo stuff was released under the full name. I don't know where you get D Delta WN from.
That made it much more difficult when I was trying to search for it. And I was like, it's got to be this one. I mean, her name's Dawn. That's Dawn. Yeah, the cover art looks like something Dustin would recommend to me. So
Maybe. I don't know if that's an insult or not. But
no, not at all. Not at all. I saw it and I was like, I bet Dustin likes this.
Her full name is Dawn Angelique Richard. She was born in New Orleans in 1983. Do you remember that show Making the Band on MTV?
Vaguely, yeah.
She was part of Making the Band season 3. She was part of what became the girl group called Danity Kane. Danity Kane was actually named after a character she made up, like an anime superhero character she was drawing. Diddy asked her, like, who was that? She said, Danity Kane. That's the name of the character. So that became the name of the band. After Danity Kane broke up, she decided to make her own music. And I guess she's been doing this for over a decade now. She's got a lot of stuff out there. First off, if you don't know what a second line is, it's a specific New Orleans thing. Funerals, parades. The first line is the line of people who are playing the instruments. The second line is the people who are basically just kind of hanging out behind the first line, dancing, having a good time. It doesn't really exist outside of New Orleans. It's part of the culture of New Orleans, which is a clue as to the fact that Second Line, the album, is a love letter to New Orleans on the part of Don Richard. Like, if you listen to the album, the first track, the intro, is called King Creole. King Creole, apparently, is the character on the cover of the album. King Creole is an android who comes to a post-apocalyptic New Orleans to learn of her humanity and spread a message of love. Like, that's... I didn't get that. I did not get that. I mean, look, in the what they call the interludes or the ludes, you hear a woman interviewing another woman. That is Dawn Richard interviewing her mother.
Have you ever been to a second line?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Look, New Orleans, yes, obviously. New Orleans is the prime entity. I get it. Okay, yes. But the future dystopian android thing, maybe? I guess Dawn Richard portrays herself vocally in a very robotic manner very often, which I guess you could consider to be perhaps King Creole. I didn't look at it that way when I was listening to it, but in retrospect, I suppose I could see it that way. I did definitely get a lot of sensuality here.
Jacuzzi's a second. Sexy song for sure.
Damn, I like it better when it's dirty. Hotter than the sauna in the summer. So won't you drip like me? Feel me so deep. Got you blowing full steam.
She's definitely sexy. She owns her sexuality, but it doesn't feel like she's exploiting her sexuality. It's just a part of the package. But there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot going on there. And, oh God, what's the name of the last track? That was the one that really hit me because it's not...
Selfish.
Yes, Selfish, yes. Because they call it an outro. I'm like, okay, Selfish outro. I'm like, okay, it's going to be like a minute long. It's 6 minutes long, but it's not one song. It's a medley. It's a whole bunch of different shit jammed together. And it's all very interesting. It doesn't necessarily fit together as one cohesive whole. These are the ideas she had left over. Like, what do I do with this shit? I like it all. None of it's long enough to be its own thing. What if I make it into a medley? It's all over the fucking place.
You know I'm possessive. It's not my fault you become a habit. I feel neglected. I'ma be selfish.
And the music itself, the actual beats, the melodies, I think are fascinating. There's a lot going on here. I feel like I just scratched the surface of what I was listening to it.
There are definitely some crunchy beats.
Oh, yeah, crunchy beats, Kai. You got soul, you got funk, avant-garde. There's so much shit going on here. I think it's very touching. It doesn't want to be one thing. I understand how that can be frustrating, but I don't know. For me, this worked. I can't always articulate it. There's a lot to unravel here, and I'm very interested in it.
I would have to say it was good. I liked it. Some of it was pretty interesting. It was definitely well made. It's interesting. It goes in all sorts of weird fucking directions you don't think it's going to go, that's for sure.
I don't know. I feel like I have to fight for this one. I don't like to rock the boat like this, but I feel like I have to fight for it. I didn't expect to.
Do the listeners need to vote for this?
I want a second opinion on this. I think the listeners need to get it on this. Second Line by Dawn Richard. If you want that in the canon, listen to it. Give it a shot. Vote honestly. I want to hear somebody else talk about this shit. That's it. Our next album is from back in 2016, I think, or 2017. It's technically two EPs.
2016.
EPs from 2016 that have recently been remastered and repackaged as one LP from Ghost Funk Orchestra. It's Nightwalker / Deathwalk.
As shadows lengthen in the asphalt homeland, the city winds down. Once vibrant streets are now a home for ghosts. Perhaps you feel that nighttime is where it's at. But take heed of this warning which I give you. Demons come out at night.
This was requested by Max Power, and Max Power said, indulge your lo-fi id with the lovingly remastered compilation of two earlier works from the beauty that is Seth Applebaum's Ghost Funk Orchestra. Nightwalker / Death Waltz. Grungy, haunting, and beautiful. It's melancholy surf rock played by an imagined band of goth monsters.
He called it a one-man band, reel-to-reel tape recorded experiments that would bring together elements of all the sounds that Seth Applebaum most adored at the time. Gratuitous spring reverb, surfy guitar, Latin-style percussion, odd time signatures, and Spanish-language female vocals. Apparently, over the years, the Ghost Funk Orchestra has grown into a literal Ghost Funk Orchestra. It started out as one man, Seth Applebaum, and now there is a 10-piece band that tours and plays music, blows minds and melts faces wherever they go. That's not how it started. It was just one guy named Seth Applebaum and made weird-ass fucking music. If you listen to Death Waltz and you realize that's basically the efforts of one man, the coolest thing I can say about this music, the experience of listening to the music.
It's an experience.
It's such a cool quality that's captured in this music that I find especially fascinating because it was all recorded by one guy on a reel-to-reel recorder. This is as lo-fi analog as you can get. This is auteur music, and it's so fucking cool.
It takes you on a journey. Fucking weird, interesting music. It's like you're just kind of walking around and then you're walking, you know, you go to a bar and there's a lady singing and you have a drink and then you walk off to the next thing.
There isn't a pervasive atmosphere of dread or anything through any of these tracks.
Yeah, it's never dreadful. It's kind of spooky and dark, but not in a scary way.
Yeah, you get kind of a spook house feel. It's all very light. There might be ghosts, but they're not going to hurt you. They're just going to go boo and maybe, no, and then you move on your life. Who fucking cares? It's low stakes, but it's fun. It's creepy. I've never heard anything else Ghost Funk Orchestra has done. Having listened to this, I'm in. How far can we go? How weird does this get? Nightwalker / Death Waltz. I love Death Waltz. I love the name. Death Waltz. That's fucking cool as hell.
I'm down with the Death Waltz.
I love this shit. Ghost Funk Orchestra, Seth Applebaum. I love it. And you're a cool motherfucker. This is a cool dude. I love that track Lost Soul because it kind of feels like music from like a forgotten movie from the 1970s. Like a sequel to The French Connection I never saw.
Tired eyes, crowded streets, and a heart that beats at the pace of busy feet. Your gaze fixes on the faces of nameless souls who sit across from you, while your mind drifts off into faraway landscapes, celestial terrains. Don't forget to keep your souls planted, or else you're likely to lose hold of the pavement and float away.
Soul is fucking awesome. Look, all of it's awesome. I'm sorry, it's all awesome.
Spoiler, it's all great.
Kai, do you think Nightwalker / Death Waltz from Ghost Funk Orchestra is good, great, or garbage?
I think this shit's pretty fucking great, and I think I love it.
It's fucking cool as hell. Kai, I guess the next question. Does Ghost Funk Orchestra's Nightwalker / Death Waltz Nightwalker, that, by the way, that's hookers. I don't know if you know that, dear listener, but it's hooker. Nightwalker's a hooker.
Oh, I thought they were talking about zombies.
No, they're talking about people who just walk around at night because they can't sleep. Does Nightwalker / Death Waltz belong in Das Trapo Essentials canon?
I've listened to this a lot, so I would say yes. I want to listen to it forever.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to be the spoiler here, Kai, I think.
Oh.
No, it's in the canon.
You got me.
Ghost Funk Orchestra, Seth Applebaum, you beautiful bastard.
Thank you.
Nightwalker / Death Waltz, you're in the canon. You made it. Congratulations. Yeah, our last album of the evening.
From Defacing God, called The Resurrection of Lilith.
They've been together since 2015. This is their first album.
A lot of bands have to play fucking bars and covers and shit, you know? I just imagine it was something like that. First big album. Extreme melodic death metal five-piece band.
7 years is a long time.
There was a COVID shit in there too, but that makes it more like 5 years.
Right, right. I know some of the members of the band are industry veterans. The main guitarist of the band has been making music for over 20 years. He's been in several bands. Defacing God is The Resurrection of Lilith, was recorded at Hansen Studios in the town of Ribe. I don't know how you pronounce it. It's R-I-B-E in Denmark. They're a Danish band. I feel like the name of the town is probably Riba. It's the oldest town in Denmark. Literally, the oldest established town in Denmark.
Which means it's a pretty fucking old place.
Right. Like, I don't know if this is why they chose to record in Riba, but the town of Riba was one of the major centers for the witch trials in Denmark in the 17th century. It's often been called Denmark's answer to Salem, Massachusetts. According to the band itself, made it the perfect place for Lilith to resurrect. I don't know if they chose it for that reason or if it was just a happy accident because they're a Danish band. Because
it was the best studio they could get.
The front person of the band, it's a woman, Kai. Did you know it's a woman? Because sometimes when you hear death metal, when you hear black metal,
you can't tell.
You can't. It just sounds like the devil is talking to you.
When it's someone screaming at the top of their lungs.
The lead singer of Defacing God is a woman named Sandy the Lilith Shorts. The last name, it's spelled G-J-O-R-T-Z. I looked this up to try to get the closest pronunciation as possible. The pronunciation I got was actually Shorts. Look at the name. You think it's Jorts or Gertz. The closest official pronunciation I could find is Shorts. I may be wrong. I'm probably wrong. But I love the idea that she calls herself Sandy the Lilith Shorts. Look, she's Danish. They're all Danish. They live in Denmark. There was a producer of the album named Lars Vintner who has actually provided much of the orchestral accompaniment, which honestly, it's a pretty solid element. It's never overwhelming. It just adds this wonderful touches every now and then. Strings and horns. It's like, oh man, that's good stuff.
Sometimes it goes full like Trans-Siberian Orchestra, like orchestral rock, but just for a second, and then it gets darker. The double bass comes in and all the delicate things fade away. It just melts your face and everything else fades away.
This music, look, I'm going to be completely real with you. If I have to be general, I don't like black metal. The first reason is black metal has been from the beginning a haven for fascists. There's a reason why many people who are trying to get into black metal have to Google black metal bands to see if they have white nationalist tendencies. There are Nazis everywhere in this fucking genre. It's a horrible truth, but it is a truth. You cannot ignore it, which is sad. Luckily, I have to say, I looked up Defacing God. I found no problematic elements. So I feel like we're in the clear here. Defacing God, they just don't like, they don't like God. They don't have a problem with minorities or women or Jews or whatever. They're fine with everybody else. They just don't like God. One of the big hurdles for a lot of people when it comes to black metal is the unfortunate proliferation of fascism. My biggest reason, the reason why I don't like black metal more than anything else is I give a lot of black metal bands a fair chance. I'll click play. The melodies can be awesome. They can melt your fucking face. But as soon as the lead singer kicks in going, I check out.
Yeah.
Like, okay, great. Growling into a microphone, I'm out. I'm not going to say anything about black metal as a genre that will denigrate the fans. If that works for you, honestly, I'm happy if you enjoy that. I can't. I look at it the same way that I look at beer. I taste a beer and I reject it. Not because I have a refined palate. It's because something's wrong with my palate that I can't enjoy beer. And you know,
true story.
Hey, try this, try this, try this. And how many times does it work? Never. It's never worked.
Yeah, tried 100 beers. And he liked two of them. Literally two of them. And one of them because it tasted like raspberries or some shit and it doesn't exist anymore.
That's exactly my point. Every now and then, one out of 100 beers I enjoy. I can't put my finger on why I like this beer. Why this beer works for me when 99 others I would rather spit into a fucking trash can. That one beer, I just know that I like it. All I know is that my palate says fuck you to 99 beers. For whatever fucking reason, Defacing God is that 100th beer. This is the one.
I think this is the one.
I can drink this whole beer.
I might even want to drink a couple more.
I got a little tipsy on Defacing God.
The Resurrection of Lilith was requested to us by returning champion Max Power. Max Power said, wrap this up with what might be a controversial pick to some. but for some bonkers reason, this shit is right up my alley. I'm not generally a fan of what they call melodic metal. It just never sounds right to my ear. I've heard this record called melodic death metal, but I just prefer to call it metal blasphemy, a sort of concept album primarily about the vilified first companion to Adam. The record also deals with the biblical Jezebel and the she-demon Abizu, who was mentioned in the ancient testament of Solomon. Wild orchestration, primeval wailing makes me a happy camper.
Fucking Amax Power, that is exactly it. It's about weird demons, and it melts your fucking face off. And then it soothes you back, and then it melts your fucking face off again. This is the end of giants, because the energy is broad. Omniscient balance, the ascension has begun. Pleasure returned to pain, and for us men will rule the world. Eternity, when the death begins, only the dead left to breathe in.
I don't know if you're big on your biblical scholarship. Let's be real here. There are three characters at the heart of the resurrection of Lilith. At first, we have Lilith, Jezebel, we have Abisu. Does anyone know who Lilith is?
She was Adam's first wife.
Just for anyone who doesn't know, there are several traditional mythologies stretching back to, I think, the Book of Enoch and beyond. They say Lilith was Adam's first wife, created as an equal to Adam. She did not want to be subservient to Adam, so she ended up fucking off, basically. God eventually made Eve out of Adam's rib. He made
her out of... Which always felt a little inbreeding.
He made Eve out of the rib because he wanted Eve to be subservient to Adam. I feel like I have to mention this right now. The resurrection of Lilith is about institutionalized misogyny. From the beginning, that's what this is about. Lilith decided she was the equal to Adam, ended up fucking off and doing her own thing. Eve was created as an alternative, subservient to Adam. Guess what? That's misogyny from the beginning. Literally from the beginning, the creation myth says Eve is subservient to Adam. That's how this shit starts. So I want you, dear listener, to understand where we're coming from and where defacing God as a band is coming from. The resurrection of Lilith is not a fucking mistake. There's a reason why it's called that. In case you don't know who Lilith is the character who exists in many different traditions. Through some stories, Lilith becomes the wife of Samael. Samael is an archangel of the Lord, a 12-winged seraph, terrifying to behold. In some stories, Samael is mentioned as Satan. Not the Satan, but a Satan, a term meaning adversary, which doesn't mean the devil. They confuse Satan with the devil. Satan is an adversarial role. In the book of Job, for instance, there is a character called Satan that basically makes a bet with God that he can turn Job away from God. That's not the devil traditionally saying, I can turn him against you. That is Satan, meaning adversary. Satan is an adversarial role. It is not the name of a character. That's one thing that people need to get right. It's a title. It's an honorific. Let's get real right now. Lucifer is not in the Bible. That's not a thing. I'm not going to get into this because this is going to be like a 40-minute conversation about different devils.
I was about to do it.
Samael, in some traditions, has been known as a watcher, which is one of the characters, the angels that came to Earth to watch over human beings and ended up fucking human beings, creating Nephilim. In some traditions, after Lilith left the Garden of Eden, said, fuck you, Adam, I'm out, she became the wife of Samael. God saw this union and thought, wait a minute, these two can't fuck. If they fuck, they'll create abominations that will destroy the world. So he castrated Samael. You're never going to have babies because fuck that. Lilith was like, hey, wait a minute. You don't have a dick anymore. So the tradition became Lilith would come to men in their sleep and bid them to ejaculate. Nocturnal emissions, wet dreams. So once again, this is an instance of misogyny. Men have wet dreams. That's not their fault. That's the fault of a demon temptress coaxing their seed out of them while they sleep. A demon temptress came to me in my sleep and forced the semen out of me. In another version, Lilith became the wife of Asmodeus, the king of hell. And they had a bunch of babies, and those became the demons that populated the underworld. Now, one of the most interesting myths that I think is like, this could become a heavy metal album tonight. At some point, Adam got tired of Eve's back talk. He said, you know what? You're a little too independent for my taste. I'm going to go fast for 100 years or whatever. I'm going to go take off. Fuck you. Went off and did his own thing. Lilith took a look at Adam and said, hey, you know what? That looks good to me. I'm going to fuck him. She seduces Adam against his will because obviously Adam has no agency in this. Adam is seduced. He's forced to fuck Lilith. Once again, misogyny.
No.
This horrible temptress came in and said, I have to fuck you.
Because there were no other women?
So he fucked Lilith, had a bunch of monster demon babies. These demon babies came out, just poured out of Lilith's vagina. Methuselah, of all people, shows up with a holy sword, which has to be on fire. And he slays scores of these demon spawn with his holy flaming sword. Adam doesn't fuck her on his own. He doesn't have the will to do it. He's a good man. She fucking forces herself on him because she's the monster. Literally, the entire fucking story behind this album is misogyny. I don't want it to be like, spoiler alert, that's what it is. Lilith is a character who, through tradition, has become a demon who kills babies, who causes miscarriages because she is unable to have children herself, so she takes this out on the children of God. Then we move on to Jezebel, the second face of this dark trinity, married King Ahab of the northern kingdom of Israel. Jezebel was a polytheist who worshipped Baal. The tradition of the kingdom was that she married into this dynasty. She could erect her own temple, continue worshipping her own gods. This is the part you have to keep in mind. The chronicle of King Ahab and Jezebel was written in the Bible several centuries after the fact. And these people were from the southern kingdom of Judea. And they were strict monotheists. One, they did not like the northern kingdom. They thought they were shitty anyway. Two, they were monotheists. So at the very least, you have a severely biased account of events that happened maybe 200, maybe 300 years in the past. Do you really think they're going to be fair and balanced to the character of Jezebel, basically the harlot who came along and ruined an entire kingdom? Any biblical account of the life of Jezebel, it has to have at least 7,000 asterisks next to it. It's not a real historical account. But according to the Bible, Jezebel bewitched Ahab, entranced the northern kingdom of Israel into worshiping Baal. Elijah the prophet stood up to Jezebel, was exiled from the kingdom. His son Elisha ended up enacting the holy wrath of God upon the kingdom and upon Jezebel herself. The prophecy said that she would be defenestrated, meaning she would be thrown from a window, and her flesh, her body, would be eaten by dogs. Well, wouldn't you know it? That's exactly what happened. She was thrown from a window, and her body was eaten by dogs. Except, this is the weirdest part. This is literally in the Bible. The only parts the dogs didn't eat were her feet and her palms. The palms of her hands. Not her whole hands. Her fingers. They ate her fingers. But the dogs didn't eat the palms of her hands. I guess, I don't know, maybe they touched the cock of the devil? I don't know. But for whatever reason, right, the dogs wouldn't touch the palms of her hands. That's a weird note for me. You hear the term Lilith in the modern world. How many people attach that to a biblical figure or a figure from, I don't know, I guess the Talmud? Not many. Most people don't even know who the mythological Lilith is. But if you hear the term Jezebel, even now, people refer to unclean women as a Jezebel, the adulteress. They're Jezebel. That is a term that has become more vilified than Lilith. Lilith is literally the mother of demons, sure. But Jezebel is the term that is more vilified and more demonized in the modern world than Lilith. Lilith has become kind of a footnote. Jezebel is still a term used to describe a woman of what they would call loose moral virtue. That's kind of fucked up. She didn't deserve that. I'm going to come back to the term misogyny. Now, look, I'll level with you. Abisu is not a great figure in mythology. It is one of the figures that rose from what they call the primeval sea. It's literally at the beginning of the Bible. Earth was a formless void and darkness crawled upon the face of the deep. The deep upon which darkness crawled was the primeval sea. Chaos. Formless void that existence was before God created the world. And Abisu was one of the demons that rose from the primeval sea. The only reason why Abisu is really listed in the resurrection of Lilith is because the band needed an unholy trinity. Abisu is not in the Bible. Abisu is a character that exists in mythologies that predate Christianity and Judaism. She was in the Testament of Solomon. Have you read the Testament of Solomon? Are you familiar with it?
Not really.
Well, I mean, look, first off, the Testament of Solomon is fucking weird as hell. King Solomon had a temple built. The archangel Raphael gave Solomon a ring that would allow him to control demons. That's cool, right? Okay, sure. How do you control demons? Do you wear the ring? That makes sense, right? No. The seal on the ring is a pentagram. You throw the ring at a demon. The impression of the pentagram is on the demon's flesh, and now you can control them. That's fucking stupid as hell. Solomon throws the ring at a demon. The demon's like, oh, you control me now. You're my master. Solomon gives the ring to that demon and says, I want you to throw this ring at Beelzebub, who's the king of the demons. When you throw the ring at him, that means I control him too. I'll be able to control Beelzebub and his army of demons. gods and have them build my temple for me. The Testament of Solomon, at least the first part of the Testament, is Solomon building an army of demons to use his slave labor to build his temple. The rest of the book is Solomon meeting a bunch of demons, interviewing them, and then punishing them. If you learn a demon's name, you can control the demon. You have power over the demon. But yeah, that's the whole thing. You can control a demon. And then he meets a woman, a foreign woman. This foreign woman seduces him. He forsakes God because she worships Moloch. If you want to fuck me, you have to worship Moloch too. Okay, fuck it. I worship Moloch now. He forsakes God to fuck this strange woman. God turns his back on Solomon. And after that, all the demons are like, man, this guy's a chump. He doesn't control us now. Fuck this piece of shit. At the end of the Testament of Solomon, Solomon literally implores the reader not to follow the same path as him. Don't forsake God for pussy. Pussy led me astray. Don't follow me. Once again, it's a misogyny. Are you literally asleep? I can't fucking believe it. I know it's not exciting. It's all misogyny is what I'm getting at.
I liked the rock music.
But there's a lot of shit going on behind the scenes of this music, which I find indeed very exciting. I think it's cool stuff. But yeah, I think the track that hit me the hardest was Echoes from Fulda. If you know anything about the Fulda witch trials, it is harrowing shit. And she names a specific character from those witch trials. There are men that are involved in the witch trials. She does not name the men. She names the victim, Murga Ian. It's a deliberate choice, obviously. And it's an empowering choice because she wants you to know the name of the victim. It's torture rolls, the bundles, the firewood beneath her feet. The audience was away from the eating fire while the stench of burn flashed on me. That's the one that fucking wrecked me, this track. When you hear the way Sandy Schertz is singing this song, not singing, this isn't singing, growling, howling.
Yeah.
It is rage personified, and it's powerful stuff. The resurrection of Lilith by defacing God, that's it. It's humbling, honestly.
Not often do I get past the first two tracks, because they usually sound the same. And after like 8 minutes of the same song, I'm like, nah. But this is definitely not that. It kept me interested the whole time. You can feel the emotion.
Oh, we're singing about dragons or whatever. No. This is real shit. And this fucking hurts. This is an attack, basically pushing back against institutionalized misogyny. That's what this is. And I guess maybe that was it. That was the way in for me. This was something that you don't hear that often in the genre. There's something here. There's substance here. I think it's incredibly worthwhile. You got me. Okay, there you go. You got me.
Badass. Face melting.
Sandy Schertz's voice. It's a condemnation.
She's condemning you. When the cries of the torture rise to the
sky. Now, Kai, the resurrection of Lilith by defacing God. Is it good, great, or is it garbage?
I'm with you on this one. I think it's pretty fucking great.
I'm going to surprise myself. I'm not a black metal fan, but this shit is nuts. I love it. Abysso? Really? The third part of your trinity? It's called Defacing God, not Defacing Gods, right? So you can't use, like, Medusa. But Medusa makes sense, because Medusa was screwed over by the gods from the beginning.
She was kind of a victim of misogyny, sort of.
This music is definitely critiquing the God of Abraham.
I thought she was screaming about Zeus the whole goddamn time.
Oh, you fucking wish. Abysso basically, I mean, if you look at the Testament of Solomon, Abysso basically is a stand-in for Lilith. They have the same MO. They're the same thing. But whatever. The resurrection of Lilith by defacing God. Look, it's great. So Kai, you know it's coming. Is it the canon?
I think it should be in the canon.
I think Defacing God just made it into the Trapo Essentials canon. Guess what, dear listener? That's the end of this particular episode of the Trapo. You know what that means, Kai?
What?
There's only one thing left to do.
Go home and go to sleep?
Soon. We need you, dear listener, to join the conversation. Go to the official Trapo blog, traposhow.blogspot.com. Leave a comment. Tell us what you think about this latest episode. Leave us suggestions for future episodes. That's it.
They could allegedly email us.
So you
Max say. Power, if you want to email us again, that's cool. Everyone else, try to be as cool as Max Power. You can email us at traposhow@gmail.com.
Traposhow@gmail.com? That sounds fake to me. That doesn't sound
real. Yeah, well, it's better than Dickblood69.
Is it?
Apparently not.
I think it's more official. Send us an email. Leave us a comment. We got comments for days. But until then, dear listener, we just listened to a bunch of your garbage music. Next time, you're going to listen to our garbage music. So until then, get the fuck off the internet because you need to burn in hell. All of you are going to burn because defacing God is the canon. Fuck you.
Trapo, the show that talks about stuff on purpose, is a Fenderman Incorporated production.